Hey everybody, welcome back to One Club Shorts Podcast. Look, I'd love to tell you we've got a ton of golf stuff to talk about, but we really don't. I mean, it's kind of in that weird time frame of right before the Ryder Cup, end of the season for the FedEx Cup. Not a lot of stuff going on. Luckily for us, we are in the thralls of some great college football and some amazing NFL football. It was a horrible week for some of us New Yorkers all around. Actually, almost all the New Yorkers except for the Jets squeezing out a win. But even with that being said, it's still, to me, one of my favorite things to talk about, week one of NFL. We're back, and it's crazier than ever. There's so much going on. Hopes have been crashed. New hopes have been risen. It's like everything that you thought would happen in the preseason either is slowly crashing and burning, and do you get in panic mode, or you just say, hey, it's week one, we'll figure it out. So, Will, I have a feeling I know where you're going to want to start, but I'll let you kick it off with an official question, and then we'll just we'll take it from there.
Yeah, Craig, where I want to start is I just want to know if you have any comments on Notre Dame going to Raleigh, North Carolina, playing a defense that had not allowed 45 points at home in over 4 years and putting up 45 on a Power Five opponent, just in week two of the season. In fact, putting up more points against that opponent than Michigan has in either of their games this year. I know, you know, there's been a lot of talk out of you about this not being a legit team for the Irish. I want to know if, you know, them going and dominating a Power Five opponent with a very good quarterback and a really feared defense is changing that at all for you.
No.
Didn't think so. And we'll follow.
Wait, I got a question for you, Will. Yeah. So a lot of trash being talked about the Notre Dame quarterback, and probably well-deserved. The kid looks like an absolute stud.
He does.
Where do you compare him now that you've seen a couple weeks? And I know it's early. We'll see how he does against Ohio State. But if you were going to rank top five quarterbacks this year, that would be NFL ready. Let me rephrase that. Top five quarterbacks that would be NFL ready at the end of this season. Where do you rank them?
So the thing with Hartman is, like, there was the whole narrative that the slow mesh offense at Wake Forest is gimmicky, and he needed to get to a more pro-style offense to show that he's NFL ready. So I think the question with him is, if you think he's going to perform this way at, you know, over the rest of the season in a pro-style offense, and you ignore how old he is, that's like all awesome for his draft stock. Like, he's shown that he can excel in an NFL offense. I think, you know, the performance against NC State was really good, but like, I think it would take something extraordinary for me to say that, like, I'd put him ahead of Caleb Williams. I wouldn't. Like, I think Drew Aller from Penn State is incredible. I think people are going to be talking about him a lot over the rest of this year. But if you look at the places where we're accustomed to seeing quarterbacks, you know, particularly Ohio State, like, Notre Dame is going to go into that game with an advantage at quarterback, which normally doesn't happen. Alabama has a tough quarterback situation. I think we're still figuring out what Quinn Ewers is at Texas. So, like, ignoring all the things that go into the NFL draft, particularly his age, I think there aren't that many quarterbacks you would want starting for your team over Sam Hartman. Like, Caleb Williams might be the only obvious one. But when you get into a conversation about, like, draft stock or readiness to excel in the NFL, like, I think the two knocks on him are he's 24 years old and people don't use high picks on 24-year-olds. And second, he's been playing in a pro-style offense for 3 games. He's done it really well, but it's 3 games.
I think Caleb Williams is by far right now just head and shoulders. His sidearm passes, the way he moves around in the pocket, his confidence now having a second year in that same system at USC. He is by far the tier one top pick of the draft.
Easily.
After that, I think it starts to get a little questionable, right? Like, is JJ McCarthy totally legit, or is he more like a Zach Wilson? Is he not big? Like, he's got a gun for an arm, and he seems to make a lot of plays, but, you know, again, he hasn't really been challenged a ton. And, you know, and in the big games, he hasn't always, you know, been as pristine as you'd want him to be, but the kid's a legit athlete. And, you know, we'll see at the end of the year, if, you know, how that all really plays out. It was interesting because I was looking at all these different quarterbacks and I'm just like, man, I'm not really excited about any of them except for Caleb Williams at this point. And I know it's early, but.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, Aller from Penn State's exciting. People are excited about Jordan Travis at Florida State.
He does look much better than I thought he would.
Yeah. It's hard to ignore what Shedeur Sanders is doing at Colorado. Obviously, I think you can ask questions about the quality of opponents they've seen, but you can do that for a lot of teams. It's only been a couple weeks. But yeah, I mean, as I said, you look around to the places where you expect to see dudes at quarterback. You look at Alabama, you look at Ohio State, you look at Clemson, and you're not really seeing that. And honestly, like, a lot of people are really big into Drake May at North Carolina. And look, man, you should not need two overtimes to beat Appalachian State at home. And you should not only put up 27 points in regulation against them. Like,
he's not that big. I mean,
he's not that big. People are
Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, people are really excited about him, but, and like, I got a lot of crap from my friends for saying that last year's game against Notre Dame showed me that Drake May wasn't good because UNC's defense lost that game. And oftentimes when he has lost games, his defense has lost them. But like, you look at the second half he played against Georgia Tech at home in a loss last year, abysmal. You look at the performance he put up against App State, really bad. Like, I think this year is going to show us a couple interesting things about Drake May. First, if UNC's defense is a little bit better, which I think the games against South Carolina and App State suggest it might be, is he, like, theoretically, if he's as good as he should be, people say he is, they should never lose. Like, they don't play a very hard schedule, and they have a defense, and they have this quarterback who's supposed to be phenomenal. Why should they ever lose? So that's one thing. And then I think the other is, like, what's been going on where he's losing winnable games? I think that's like a huge red flag for me with good college quarterbacks. Like, the best ones do not lose winnable games. And Drake May is starting to have a reputation of making those games really interesting or not winning them. And like, I am lower on him than a lot of people, but yeah, I'm on like Drake May red flag watch.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a stock drop from where they thought he'd be at the end of last year to where he is now. That doesn't mean he can't rebound. He's got, again, they have a lot of season left. But I think it doesn't take many red flags. If you're going to be a first round quarterback, you almost have to be so perfect.
Yeah.
Or such a high ceiling, you know, athletically, where it's like, man, yeah, they may be a little loosey goosey with the ball. They may not be have a ton of experience, but holy cow, they dominated, you know, every athletic challenge we put in front of them. We'll turn them into a good pro, you know, yeah. Anthony Richards-esque. Like, exactly. They'll figure it out.
And then Drake May is, of course, at risk of his old OC is at Wisconsin now. So yeah. Anyone who wants to say Drake May is a system quarterback is going to have a little bit of ammo to do it. And that's not good for the narratives.
Yeah.
But we can move off of college football because week one in the NFL, Buffalo. What'd you say?
Time to talk Buffalo.
It is time to talk Buffalo. So, Glenn,
mm-hmm.
You called this game out as the game that whichever fan base lost would certainly overreact to. And man, is there a lot to overreact to. So the Jets and Bills play on Monday night. Aaron Rodgers lasts four snaps, effectively ending the Jets season for all non-Zach Wilson believers. And yet the Bills still find a way to lose the game. Give me your assessment of just what went on in that mess on Monday night.
Well, it's the first NFL football game that ended with two losers. I think in the exactly. Football. So my prediction is somewhat half true. Bills fans are really down on Josh, as they should be. And look, he took the blame. He put it on his shoulders because he absolutely had to. He made three horrific throws and fumbled a couple times. Thankfully, only lost one. I don't know where his head is, but you know what makes Josh great is that confidence he has in himself to make the impossible throw. Mm-hmm. That also puts him in a position where he's going to have games like this. You know, Peyton Manning, I remember as great as Peyton Manning was, he would have two or three dog games every season where the ball was just fluttering and he'd throw a bunch of picks.
Yep.
So I'm not on the, oh no, it's over. I mean, he still had a better, after all of that, he had a better passer rating than Joe Burrow.
Yeah, well, Joe Burrow, we're going to get to
way
that.
Way to set the bar.
Yeah, so that's where I'm setting it. the highest paid player in football history, and Josh Allen had his worst game as a Bill since his rookie year, and he still had a better QBR. I'm not hitting panic mode. I know Bill's Mafia is hitting panic mode. There's too much talent. They're currently healthy, and that's the only two things you need to win in this league.
So, I mean, are you the buzz that I'm hearing? Maybe it's not buzz, maybe it's still whispers at this point, but what I'm hearing people say is Josh Allen actually is not good without Brian Daboll. And he does have the most interceptions in the NFL in the last 18 regular season games. He has not had a whole ton of playoff success. I know some of that rests on a coin flip, which may still be a sore spot, but
yeah.
Like, what do you, I think last year we talked a good amount about Josh Allen's decision-making, Josh Allen's propensity to turn the ball over in high leverage spots. And the fact that this offense led by ostensibly one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL put up what, 13 points, 16 points,
16
on the Jets. Mm-hmm. Like, are any alarm bells for you with Josh Allen, or is this still a situation where, look, he's so talented, he's going to win you more games than he loses you, et cetera?
If you would have asked me Monday night, I would have said, season's over. But Dawn and I rewatched the game last night. It wasn't as bad as I think everyone's saying. It's not time to throw in the towel. It's not. I think what Daboll gave Josh that Dorsey doesn't is a calming voice. Dorsey is a hothead, crazy, you know, slamming the iPad down. Josh needs someone in his ear that's going to calm him down. You know, every week, I don't know if the teams you follow do this, sometimes they'll play, oh, this is what the player is listening to music before the game. And usually it's like, you know, hardcore rap, hip hop, you know, heavy metal. Josh listens to like Frank Sinatra and Mel Torme. And so he has a sort of smoothness in his head. So I think he's very aware of how scattered he is and how overconfident he can be. And I think he does everything to calm himself in those big moments. I don't think Ken Dorsey is a good fit for a young quarterback, a young offensive coordinator, not a good fit for a really young raw quarterback. He's still raw. He still has a ceiling that he hasn't hit yet, Josh Allen, given his talents. I think we just need a more mature and more creative offensive play calling and someone just to get in his ear and calm him down.
Well, let's be clear, too. Jets defense is not a pushover.
Yeah,
they are the top 10 defense in the league right now, and they're healthy. Finally, like the last couple of years, they've had all this talent, and they haven't been healthy. They're healthy now. So this team with Aaron Rodgers would have been extremely tough to beat. Without Aaron Rodgers, you've got one of the top 10 defenses in the league, keeping them in the game, forcing turnovers. And I still think, I sent Glenn a note on this, I still think he was trying to keep his receivers happy and forcing plays that he just didn't need to force, right? Just half those could have been thrown away, live for another day, punt it, or go for the next down. But I think he's trying too hard. And we've seen this with a lot of quarterbacks when they're trying to keep their number one receivers happy as far as getting the ball, feeding the ball. When you force it, things fall apart. When you don't let things happen naturally and make the plays, things start to fall apart. And then you saw the stupid things, like the fumble, fumble snap. There's just a lot of crap that went bad. Mm-hmm. Besides the punter's lack of tackling, there's a lot of things that you're just like, man, that probably won't happen again. Right? Like, it definitely is. If I was a Bills fan, it is definitely not doom and gloom. If I'm a Jets fan, I'm probably a little bit more frustrated because I was so amped up for this season. all I could think about was, finally, we've got one of the most legendary quarterbacks in the history of the NFL leading us away. We've got our young receiving core. We've got two great running backs. We got a stud defensive defense. We've got an okay offensive line. Should be just enough to keep us in this game. Three plays, four plays, whatever it was. And yes. That's just it's incredible. I felt, again, not a Jets fan by any means, but I was excited to watch Aaron Rodgers play for them. I was excited to see him kind of turn the corner. Man, what a pit in your stomach just to be like, no, no, there's no way. Like, this couldn't happen again.
It was such a nothing hit. Like, he just kind of dragged him down and his ankle just twisted. And the first he went down and, you know, he never showed pain, never winced, never grabbed the ankle. He stood up. Then he looked at the sideline, he shook his head, and then he went down. He went, and I almost thought it was like a heat cramp or something, you know, just because it was so hot and humid in New York on Monday. But man, I'm with you. I was excited, and the Jets are in my division. I want to beat them every time, but I was excited to see how many times have we said this team's a quarterback away from winning a Super Bowl. That's exhibit A of a team that's quarterback away from winning a Super Bowl. I would have loved to see what he could have done with that team this year.
Yeah, it's brutal. And I also thought, like, how awful it must have been to be Robert Saleh and just show up in your press conference and go, yeah,
yep,
it's over. Like, whatever he said, like, we're going to get the images back tomorrow, but I think we know what's up.
X-rays are negative. I'm like, what was this X-ray machine from like 1830? How do you not know immediately what that is?
The crazy part is they're blaming the turf again. And I know that the union's already said they're pushing for grass fields all along, but I don't know. I didn't see his foot get caught in the turf. Maybe it happened so fast that you just couldn't see it, but
yeah,
that to me didn't seem like a turf injury. That just seemed
you could see a catch
falling and twisting you over in a way that you're how old is he? 40 years old? 39 years
39,
old?
Yeah.
Your body just doesn't twist like it used to be, you know? So it sucks. Mm. I mean, I don't know. But I don't know if that was the turf one. Turf that they put in Giant Stadium, the players approved, management approved, all the medical staff approved. They're supposed to be best of the best. Mm-hmm. So if that's not the case, I don't know what it I mean.
It's also like, to me, the bottom line is there is no chance, legitimately no chance, that a natural grass surface would be better for, I don't know, at least 10 of the 17 games of an NFL season in New York, New England, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, like any of these places that where you play outdoors and you're playing games in November and December, there is not a chance a natural grass field is better. It's just impossible. Like, and I know the NFLPA said, like, the research is on our side. I feel like when we were having this discussion last year, the research was kind of inconclusive. So I don't know what happened in the offseason, but look, like, I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine about the Yankees. Like, a lot of stuff that happens in sports is luck. Like, you throw a ball and it gets tipped and intercepted, or it gets tipped and falls on the ground. Like, a lot of that is luck. A lot of injuries boil down to luck, that something is or isn't as severe as it turns out to be. And we always want to find an explanation. No, there needs to be someone to blame. There needs to be a throat to choke for why this turned out the way it did. No, maybe Aaron Rodgers is just a 39-year-old quarterback who had a weird freak way to tear his Achilles. Like, we're going to act like that doesn't happen? There doesn't have to be an explanation. Like, oh, if he hadn't been playing on turf. I don't know if I really buy that.
I mean, I've played on those wet, saucy grass fields, and it is not good for your knees and your ankles and everything else. I mean, you're just slipping and sliding. There's not a cleat in the world that can save you from, you know, things getting caught underneath you and twists that shouldn't happen and what have you. And then when that freezes over, it's literally like playing on ice. So, I mean, I've been there, done that. Like, I get it. There's something wrong with the turf last time because there's just way too many ACL injuries, but you know, I don't know. Maybe it's also the way that these guys are working out now too. Maybe it's, you know, there's different things that they've got to be structured. Because I don't remember, and maybe this is due to grass, but I don't remember back in the day this many ACLs and MCLs getting torn every year. It is kind of a crazy thing. But they train differently, right? Mm-hmm. It was just a different time, I guess.
And there are different rules about where you can hit guys and how you can hit guys. And yeah. I mean, there are a million variables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just bad luck. I mean, it was a rainy night. It was a rainy day. And like you said, Craig, this new turf is softer than usual at the other turfs. I don't know if like just the combination of sliding and then digging into the softness. And then it just, you know, it was just a weird hit. Like it wasn't even a hit. He just kind of grabbed him by the waist and pulled him down. And, you know, when you saw that ankle buckle underneath, it was like, oh, geez, just, I don't know. It just sucks.
So the big question is to everybody is where do they go? Right. Mm-hmm. I know they're putting on a brave face and saying Zach Wilson's our starter, but they got to bring in a veteran. Right. And there's some good veterans out there still. You got Nick Foles, you've got, you know, Fitzpatrick, you've got
Joe Flacco was saying he still got it. Did you Flacco, see that?
Yeah, I mean, you got Carson Wentz. So yep. There's and Cam Newton's out there still. Colin Kaepernick has thrown his hat in the ring saying he wants to, you know, go through the interview process. So they've got people out there to choose from. I think it's kind of crazy not to grab a veteran at this point. Because, I mean, you'll still have Aaron Rodgers being able to coach him up, right? It's not like he's going away. But at the end of the day, there's going to be times where Zach Wilson just falls apart. We saw it last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of all those quarterbacks, who do you think they grab?
Well, I think the Manning cast auditions gave us a little foreshadowing because they never got to Tom Brady and he said, maybe I'll go back to football.
That's true.
So I think, I wonder if he's getting a call.
I guarantee he's getting a call.
Yeah. I think the report today was the Jets aren't going near it.
Really?
Yeah. Which I don't know if I believe that, but that's at least something they're spreading. I was seeing a little bit of Wentz buzz. Maybe there's something there, but
Matt Ryan coming out of the booth after his, because he still wants to play. I think Matt Ryan still wants to play. And look, with that defense, you know, you go with the 2000 Ravens model. You need a quarterback that throws for 180, 220. That's all you need with that defense. That's going to be a nut running game.
Yeah, oh, those backs.
Breece Hall and Dalvin Cook, that's a 1-2 punch. So they've got weapons. They just need a serviceable quarterback that can get it to those good receivers and hand it to those great running backs and then let the defense take care of everything else. Team's not done.
Not done. Mm-hmm. Speaking of serviceable quarterbacks, Craig, are you prepared to talk about the Giants?
Yeah, I guess so.
So, you know, we asked on the last podcast if you had any message to the people who said that the Giants were bound to regress. They had a negative point differential last year. So many of their wins were in close games. You can't replicate that. And whether those people were right or wrong, I think I can't imagine too many people were expecting a 40-0 home loss right out of the gate. I don't even know how you react to it. I think the weirdest part for me, and I'd love to get your take on this, is it's not like they allowed a bunch of yards.
No.
Like they didn't put up a bunch of yards, but they allowed 265 yards of offense. They just managed to find a million different non-offensive ways for the Cowboys to score. So when you think about kind of how weird the game was, but also how anemic the offense looked, like how are you triangulating all those things?
So, like you got to break it up into buckets, right? So we gave up 21 points off of dumb errors, total Giant misplays, blocked field goals, and by the way, that drive that was going in for a touchdown. Dallas was on their heels; they had no idea what to do. We were just consistently getting 6 yards at a pop, you know, and then little dump off passes. It was working. Then you get the offsides, and you get the bad snap. And I get it. It's rain. It's pouring rain. It was downpouring at the night. So I get it. But Dallas had to deal with the same element, so you can't really use that as an excuse. But to me, so take all that aside. And then the defense actually did okay against Dallas. The two rookie cornerbacks held up pretty well. I know what's his name got hurt, at Hawkins Banks, I think his name is, but one of them got hurt with cramps. But the defense actually held up pretty well. To me, the most disappointing thing was there was zero pass rush. We never made Dak feel uncomfortable. So you take those 21 points aside, and they still would have won pretty easily by 14, right? Because we were inept in, one, getting to Dak and making the big stop when we needed to. And that's where we really had a good focus. We picked up Isaiah Simmons. We picked up, Thibodeau and Ojulari coming back healthy in, you know, their second and third year. You've got Dexter Lawrence with a massive contract this year. You got Barbie Okoro, who's the new middle linebacker, who's supposed to be an absolute stud. This was a lot to be excited about. At the end of the day, we couldn't stop them when we absolutely needed to for the big play to create a turnover or do whatever. And that kind of weather, you've got to be able to create turnovers. So that part's all very frustrating. But the defense will get better. I know they'll get better. They're too good. There's too much talent, and they're just getting used to the system. They'll be fine. The scariest part for me is, one, the O-line was so poor, especially on the right-hand side, that they weren't just getting beat by Micah Parsons. They were getting beat by the third and fourth string, pass rushers. They were just getting manhandled by basically anybody that got put in front of them. And you cannot win a game that way. Danny Jones was seeing ghosts before the ball was even snapped sometimes. So I get it. He missed some open throws, but he was probably concussed in the second quarter and so rattled that he just was, you know, running for his life and trying to force things. To me, the worst part of the whole thing was, we didn't really get to see, and Danny Jones didn't play a great game. I don't want to be overly protective of him either, because he did not play a great game. But at the end of the day, he didn't have any time at all. And that's super frustrating, because we've got three first and second round picks in the center and the two tackles now. And the two tackles were both picked in the top five or top 10, I think. The two guards were pretty big investments on the Giants side last year, and both pretty well-respected guards, and they sucked. I mean, I could put one of my 11-year-old guards in that same spot and would have gotten the same result. It's just, it was that bad. And it was just, at the end of the day, I don't know how to fix that at this point, right? Like, there are some free agents out there that can pick up and shake things around, but man, how could they have not seen it throughout all of the offseason, throughout the preseason, that, you know, that these guys were this bad? And I get it, during the preseason games, you're seeing vanilla defense, but man, how are we that off? You know, if we needed to move, our tackle Evans into the guard spot, you know, that should have been done week one of preseason. Get them used to it. Now, I don't know if you can do that after week one of the regular season. It's just, you're now in desperation mode a little bit. So I'm not in pure panic that they're not going to get better and play better, have a better season. But man, is that offensive line absolutely dismal.
Yeah, it's so funny when you look at the stats on that game, they weren't that far off from each other except for sacks. You know, the Giants allowed 7 sacks and Dallas didn't allow any. Other than that, Dak didn't play that much better than Daniel Jones. But that offensive line, getting kicks, he blocked kicks, and you know, the blocking on the line is just horrendous. Same with the Bills. It's just horrendous, and it's such an important part of the game that I don't understand how these teams can overlook it. But I will say there was one bright spot for the Giants. Tyrod Taylor, 2 for 2, 6 yards.
Bills legend.
100% passer rating, whatever. It's at a 140.7.
Two for two for 6 yards might not,
I don't know where we go,
get you at a 158.3.
Start Tyrod week 2.
Dude had a perfect game. Had a perfect game.
Craig,
at least we're going to Arizona. So if there's ever a team to actually try and have a comeback game with, Arizona's the one to do it. But I don't know. I have zero confidence. I don't know if any Giants fans has any confidence that this offensive line will be able to stop, a bunch of, you know, backups at this point. So, and our best tackle, who actually still played pretty well, has a hurt hamstring. Andrew Thomas, has a hamstring injury from trying to chase down one of the block kick, I think it was. So,
Craig, what do you make of the rest of the division? Everyone won.
Yeah. But Washington, I'm still not super worried about. I just think we're light years behind Dallas and the Eagles. Mm-hmm. And I do think Dallas will get a reckoning at some point. I still think the Eagles are a better all-around team. The Eagles have a little bit of trouble tomorrow night because they have so many injuries. But I still think they'll probably be able to squeak out a win. Dallas will still implode. They're just destined for it.
How they operate.
But I'll tell you what, that D-line is scary.
Yeah, it sure is. Glenn, what about you? The people are really excited about the Dolphins offense. I saw that Tua's MVP odds went way up after his performance on Sunday. The Patriots, you know, to their credit, hung with the Eagles, I think, more than people thought they would. The defense, I think, acquitted itself pretty nicely. They still can't move the ball, or at least they can't move the ball like in the red zone. They're bad at scoring touchdowns. I think Mac may have thrown for like 350 yards or something, but you wouldn't have known it. How do you handicap that competition, you know, with Rodgers out, with the performance that you saw from the Bills, with the Dolphins being, you know, kind of electric on offense? What do you make of the landscape?
Well, you know, you have to put the Dolphins at the top right now, just because of that offense. But on the other side, they don't really have a good defense. And I think the Bills are probably the only team now in the division that can keep up with them scoring wise. So I think I'm not like Craig, I'm not worried. I think the Bills, a lot of people were down on the Bills coming into this year. It was a weird night in MetLife. So I'm not worried. I think they're going to bounce back against Las Vegas this week. But it was just a weird scheduling thing, because I still think the two best divisions in football are the AFC East and the NFC East. And by whatever happenstance, they play each other this year. So
yeah,
they're gonna inflict a lot of losses on each other, which is going to be interesting down the playoff stretch to see who squeaks in. You know, usually when you have teams, divisions this strong, you know, two or three teams can get into the playoffs. I don't think it's happening this year just because they're both playing each other. Those are going to be tough games, tough matchups. But I'm not worried. I think the Bills bounce back. We have Vegas, and then we have Washington, and then we play Miami. See where we are.
That'll be a big one. Mm-hmm. I think it's time for us to talk about the newly highest paid player in the NFL and the week one that he had. Joe Burrow, in a 24-3 loss in Cleveland, was 14 of 31 for 82 yards. And normally, I feel like the narrative around Burrow is, well, his offensive line is so bad he gets sacked all the time. He only took 2 sacks on 31 dropbacks. So it can't be all that. He didn't throw a single interception. For all the talk about that offense and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd and Joe Mixon and Joe Burrow and all their weapons, they could not do anything against the Browns. Craig, any buyer's remorse, you think, on Cincinnati's part?
Yeah, talk to Jack. He drafted Burrow super early in fantasy football because he's a big fan. And it's crazy. I don't know. I mean, Burrow's great. He'll figure it out. But it was an interesting game to watch because I've never seen him look so inept, right? You still have all your offensive weapons there. And the O-line didn't play great, but they didn't play horrible. It was just such a weird game. And I don't know if you told me at halftime that was the highest paid quarterback in the league, you'd be like, no way. If you didn't know who he was, you would say, who's this backup? You know, he must just be filling in for somebody because he didn't look like the Joe Burrow of old. Now he'll bounce back. He's just too good. I don't know how else to say it. No one seemed super worried from the Cincinnati side, but it was definitely not a weekend for the big name quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I think Mahomes looked okay. Not typical. out of this world Mahomes. I get it. Like, there was a lot of drop passes from his receivers there, but still, that was a very winnable game for Mahomes on most situations. You had, Josh Allen had his struggles. Aaron Rodgers goes down. I mean, it was just one thing after another. Brock Purdy was basically the number one quarterback in the league this weekend and not even close. He was just awesome. And I'm not saying
you had some Dolphins fans who think you're erasing Tua's performance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Tua played pretty great. I got to give him credit. But yeah, it was not a great quarterback weekend all around. So I don't know. I don't think Burrow's got too much, or Cincinnati fans have too much to worry about. He'll be back.
Yeah, for some reason, Cleveland just has Cincinnati's number. And, you know, Myles Garrett, you know, if they put pressure on him, Burrow played terrible. I mean, like you said, it was a weird week. I'm just glad that Ja'Marr Chase has given us the quote of the year so far. Did you see what he said after the game?
He said,
I'm just frustrated because I called their ass elves and we just lost to some elves. I don't know how you beat that this year in the quote post game.
You're not going to.
You can't beat that.
I mean, you're not gonna. That's amazing.
You gotta hang that in a museum. That's just awesome.
So I think it's probably time to talk about Brock Purdy. You'll remember last year I was a total Brock Purdy denier. You know, this is a flash in the pan. He can't really be this good. You know, his last 2 years in college, and he was a four-year starter, so it's not like he lacked experience. He had 38 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. Like, he was addicted to throwing the ball to people who were not wearing his team's jersey. Like, he loved it. He would find extremely creative ways to do it. Like, you could make an hour-long compilation of Brock Purdy college lowlights. It was unbelievable. Like, people talk about good teams finding ways to win. At Iowa State, all Brock Purdy did was find ways to lose. And I was plugged into that. And now he's in the NFL. He's thrown, I think it's 15 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. He's suddenly, like, very accurate. He's completed like over 2/3 of his passes as an NFL quarterback. Obviously, he plays in an offense that's full of weapons where he doesn't have to take crazy shots to make a difference. But, like, holy cow, like, this Brock Purdy, I kind of wonder, like, did they just, like, replace Brock Purdy with, like, a body double the way they did with Avril Lavigne? And, like, original Brock Purdy is, like, hidden somewhere, and this is a different guy that they get to pay like he was the last pick in the draft, but really he's some phenomenal quarterback. Like, I have no idea where this came from, but good for him, man.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, remember the last game of last year, the playoff game where he got hurt, was the only game that he really looked rattled before. Mm-hmm. even before he got hurt, he was under so much pressure from the Eagles that he was making bad judgment. Like, the whole year he didn't look rattled, he didn't make any bad calls, he just was staying within himself and within the system and playing great. And then the Eagles team rolled in and kind of beat the crap out of him, and he hurt his arm. But you know, coming back this year, you didn't know what you were going to get. You hadn't really seen him since then. Was he just a flash in the pan? But, man, he looked awesome. And, you know, now you know why they let Trey Lance go. Now you know why they have so much faith in him in the system. They just – this kid's a real deal, you know. It'll be interesting to see how he comes around when he starts to get, you know, more pressure on him again. But he just seemed to be kind of gliding around on Sunday and just hitting his spots, not really worried about anything else, and happy. He was, you know, making gestures after first downs. It just, you know, he started to feel himself. I think he's as legit as any quarterback in the league right now, especially after the weekend that we saw from some of these guys.
Yeah, this might be the most complete team now with Aaron Rodgers going down. You know, you have a great defense, great pass rush, It's great to have Christian McCaffrey back there in the backfield.
Looks like he's 20 years old again, doesn't he? McCaffrey.
Yeah, he's like rejuvenated. But I don't know if it is Brock Purdy sort of a parallel to Josh Allen, where, you know, he didn't have all the best coaching coming up, and they saw some raw talent and they were able to work with him last year and work on mechanics and get him, you know, in decision making. Bad week to talk about Josh's decision making. You know, it could be that. You know, there was an interesting story in New York Times a couple of years ago about specifically about high school athletes coming out of Fairfield, Connecticut, and how they have so much individual attention and coaching, and the coaching's so good, and the parents have money, so they're sending them to specialists, that by the time they get to the college, they've hit their ceiling.
So I think
coaches now, I don't want to call it the Josh Allen effect, but maybe it is. I think teams at all levels now are looking for raw talent that they can work with. Like, that kid didn't have a quarterback's coach. His parents didn't have money to send him a couple times a week to work on mechanics and thought process with the next NFL player. That happens in Fairfield County, Connecticut. And so there's a ceiling. And I think teams are starting to look at these kids with raw talent that they can work with, and they can see that the guys that haven't hit their ceiling, and they can sort of evaluate what that ceiling can be. And I think this, you know, maybe this, that could be it. I don't know, but it's the only thing that I can explain how you make a jump like that.
It's interesting that on that take, it used to be where if you didn't have it by the time you got to the pros and you were just kind of fine tuning things, you were out of the conversation, right? Because they're like, we don't have time to teach you how to be a quarterback now, because whatever, we'll teach you our offense, we'll teach you how to get the ball to certain spots and, you know, how to make reads on defense, but that's it. You better know how to throw, you better have good footwork, you better have all these things, because it is such like a win now league. And maybe that's taken a different direction again, especially with quarterback. I feel with, like, there's only a few positions that you really have to, like, defense, you can almost, you know, if you're instinctive enough and aggressive enough, you'll figure out your position for the most part. Technique's always there and you'll get better as you go. Game slows down for you. But for the most part, you got it, right? You either got it or you don't. But I think for receivers, running backs, and cornerbacks, having that extra tutelage at that level with the high, you know, the high level coaching that you get in the NFL is so beneficial. It's tough to write those guys off early because you just never know.
I want to shout out Brock Purdy's brother, Chuba Purdy, the backup quarterback at Nebraska. He hasn't really done anything. He's sitting behind Jeff Sims, who has been terrible. I love Jeff Sims though. Shout out Special Jeff. But man, Chuba Purdy, all-time name, just an all-time name.
Sounds like a candy. Like, oh yeah, I'm going down the candy store to get some Chuba Purdy's.
Exactly.
You want some?
Exactly. And hey, he got into the game last weekend against Colorado. We'll see if he sees any more action. I got to shout myself out a little bit here. I told everyone, watch out for Zay Flowers. And then if people were watching out for Zay Flowers, what they saw is that he led the Ravens in targets, receptions, and receiving yards. He accounted for 78 of Lamar's 169 passing yards in a kind of like weird, underwhelming, but never in doubt performance against the Texans. You know, I'm not always the guy who's out here going to bat for Boston College, the historic little brother of my preferred institution, but Zay Flowers, a BC product, really delivered for, you know, the hometown team and my fantasy team as well this weekend, and I felt very vindicated watching him do it. So just had to get that in there, taking a little victory lap on the Zay Flowers take.
Yeah, it looked like a stud. I mean, I think Odell had what, you know, 3 or 4 catches max?
2 catches on 3 targets.
So, I mean, you know, looks like Flowers is the the target of choice for Lamar right now. But I wonder if that pisses Odell off, or if he knows.
Well, Odell's already disgruntled, I guarantee it.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, only 3 targets. Did he get hurt? Did he come out of the game? And I thought I heard that he twisted his ankle or something, but
he may have, but 3 targets tied him for 2nd on the team.
Yeah.
Like Lamar attempted 22 passes. Ooh. 10 of them went in the direction of Zay Flowers. And I think like part of what we're seeing here is I think he only targeted tight ends twice. And Isaiah Likely is kind of like a combo guy. So had Mark Andrews been playing, I think that shakes out differently. But yeah, if you're Odell and you're expecting to get a bunch of targets, you can't be too pleased. And of course, that was another game with a terrible season ending injury as J.K. Dobbins went down and is going to miss an entire season again. You got to feel bad for that guy. He's like the Will Zalatoris of football.
He can't putt?
He can't putt, exactly. Exactly. A short game's terrible.
Poor guy. It looked like Lamar had another serviceable game.
Yeah, he was fine. He threw a pick, but he was generally accurate, made a little bit of a difference on the ground. I think they're like, I don't know what they're going to do at running back with Dobbins gone, but because I do think that there's going to be a commitment to keeping Lamar as like not the centerpiece of the running game, especially after giving him all that money. And I don't think today they have a great strategy for how they're going to do that, because he was the only guy who was really productive, getting productive touches in the running game. So they're going to need to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny. I don't think a whole lot of teams separated themselves this weekend. I think, Miami showed that they're competitive, but I think that whole division is going to be pretty competitive this year. Dallas obviously played great, but let's see if they can continue to go down that route. I think to Glenn's point, you've got Seattle didn't look great, but you've got the I think the 49ers right now look like the one team that came in and hasn't missed a step from last year and just kind of ready to rock. So
even the Dolphins
in 2 weeks.
Even the Dolphins, like they put up a ton of points, but they also showed that you can kind of score at will against them.
Yeah.
Like it was a late drive fueled by their very explosive offense, of course, but like it was a late drive that got them the win there. And they had given up, 34 points in 56 minutes prior to that or something. Like, and Justin Herbert did not have like a great Justin Herbert game. The main problem was they let Eckler and company run all over them. Like, holy cow, could they not stop the run? I think that's, if I were a Dolphins fan, that's what I'd be concerned about, is you can get in all these track meets, but like, if it's just last team to have the ball wins, it's a coin flip as to whether you're going to win or not.
Yeah. At what point does LA, the Chargers start thinking about getting rid of that coach? I just think he's had so many big games and so many losses and just kind of some questionable decisions going for it at the end of the game, not going for it. At some point, I don't know, I'd look at him with all, there's another team. That team's got a ton of talent. They've been underperforming since Herbert got there. Herbert's great.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument that it would be tough to do less than Staley has with the guys he's had. That his best season is 10-7. Again, it's only year three for him. There was a modest improvement over the prior year, but like the idea that like this is what they're getting out of that roster, I agree. It strikes me as, hey, do you need to kind of take a look at this?
Yeah, after blowing that game last year in Jackson against Jacksonville, it's like,
yeah,
you got to start looking at this guy. I mean, you said it's only 3 years, but I think he's a coach that as of now is on the hot seat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that playoff game was unforgivable. Mm-hmm. To get outscored 24-3 mm-hmm. in the second half with all the mm-hmm. talent you have on offense.
Yep.
And like their defense was serviceable last year. It wasn't like worst in the league. That was really bad. And then you come out and obviously they didn't blow quite that much of a lead against the Dolphins, but to have the lead late and give it right up, mm-hmm. it's not the start you want to get off to.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Interesting.
Yeah, so a lot of season left. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes, but man, it's the storylines have been laid and it'll be fun to follow. obviously on the PGA Tour front, we have the final fall season. I don't know like what's going to happen to Autumn, the institution, the part of the year without 8 minor golf tournaments happening during it, but I guess we'll find out next year. But we've got the Fortinet, the first of that fall series this week. Max Homa is almost guaranteed to win it as he's won it the last 2 years. And that's how I understand those things to work. It does sound like, and maybe this is just post Ryder Cup, there could be some solid fields this fall just because of the way the incentives work for being able to improve your FedEx Cup standings after the fact to either make sure you secure your card or play your way into some of the designated events. So we could be seeing some big names who didn't advance very far in the FedEx Cup making a little bit of a splash this fall. But I gotta say, even with like a pretty underwhelming weekend of college football coming up, with the NFL back and with college football in full swing, it's going to be hard for the PGA Tour to convince me that I should be watching anything basically until and except the Ryder Cup. And I'd be surprised if you guys feel differently.
No, I'll watch more footage of the Koskov Crushers, the team we play this Sunday, than I will of any golf this weekend, put it that way.
Craig, are you, the serious question, are you doing film study for 11-year-old football?
Yeah, 100%.
Actually?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yep.
I'm like fascinated by this. Is anyone doing something weird? Like, is there a team that never punts? Is there a team that's running the triple option? Or like, is everyone basically running the same playbook and you just see what they like?
No, it's so the way they have it set up, everyone's got access to everyone's, it's like a team wide, it's called, you know, huddle. Everyone's got access to everyone's games. And it's more of just getting used to, you know, their strengths and weaknesses. I don't break it down to how many run plays they do. I don't look for tendencies. I don't look for any of that stuff. I know some coaches do. For me, it's just more about if I'm going to put my defense in there, what do I need to make sure I have covered and get the kids prepared well enough so they can, you know, go out and have a good game. But I watch more. We just haven't played yet. I'll watch more of our games than I will of the opponents because you never know. Most of these other teams have, you know, 2 or 3 kids that are absolute studs and the rest are just kind of holding everything together. So you just focus on those players. But for me, it's, I'm a better coach watching them after the fact to say, okay, great. We meant to go this way and 2 kids spaced out and went the other way and it caused a massive hole to open up and the running back basically skipped through and got a touchdown. I got to address that with the team. I got to figure out, you know, who's not paying attention, who's doing what, who's helping us, who's hurting us, who's hustling, who's not, all these things. So that's what I usually look for. But we had a bye the first week, so I'm just taking advantage of that and watching. My favorite play that I saw this week was a dog running on the field. Because the kid who owned the dog was on the field at a point, and all of a sudden you're watching this run play and everything gets kind of piled up and you see this Labradoodle go running across. And I'm like, what was that? So I stopped and went back and watched it. Yeah, well, sure enough. And then you watch the end of the play and it comes back into the huddle and the ref has to grab it and then the mom comes up. So, yeah.
You just wanted to be Air Bud.
Yeah. I don't know how to stop that. I don't know.
Are you practicing the annexation of Puerto Rico?
Not yet. But I'm a defensive coach, Glenn. I don't care what they run on the offense.
I had so many suggestions. I was going to say you should run Philly special. I was going to say you should install the triple option. Just run like the 1988 Notre Dame playbook. It worked for them. I was going to say that you should do the thing that Bill Belichick used to do where he would mess with which guys were on the line of scrimmage versus not to mess with who's eligible. So then they'd have like an unbalanced line and a tight end would be ineligible because he's covering up the tackle, and then the tackle's eligible. Like, they threw a touchdown to Nate Solder in the AFC Championship one year doing that. Like, you gotta mess with that stuff.
Everybody does that.
Everybody does that. Yeah, sure.
I think you should blitz on every down, send the house, and just steamroll everybody.
I'm telling all the kids to make sure they wear the same colored gloves that they have as jersey, so it's harder to tell holding.
They were talking about that on the Kelce podcast, right?
Julian Edelman was talking about that.
Yeah, the red gloves.
Wear red gloves, and you get in trouble because it was like a wearing a big red flag every time he grabbed somebody in the pads. And he kept getting penalties, and Belichick would just say to him, "You had to do it, right? You got to be there. You can't wear the white gloves like everybody else." Like this.
That's awesome. All right, Craig, as we get things wrapped up here, what do people got to know about what we're up to here at One Club Short?
Yeah, so we got our last event coming up at Morris County Golf Club. It is it's going to be such a cool way to end our season. It's a great golf course. It's really easy to get to from everywhere in the tri-state area. And it's very highly regarded. It is the same format that we've done before. It's a foursome. Better ball of the group net and gross. We've got some great prizes already lined up. Some of it you can actually see online at our Shopify shop, because we're selling some of the stuff as well. But we've got a couple spots left. It's 2.5 weeks away. So it's October 3rd, which is a Tuesday. I know we usually do Monday, but this is a Tuesday. So, we'd love to see you all. It'd be a great way to kind of end your golf season as we head into a little bit of fall ball. I'm looking forward to it. This was one of the ones that I hadn't had a chance to really play or know much about when we initially started looking at it. And I'm super psyched we got it. So it is going to be a awesome send off for the year.
Can't wait. Glenn, any parting shots from you before we wrap up here?
Well, I just saw that, Dave Portnoy put a $10,000 bet on your boy Hartman to win the Heisman.
I love that.
So. That's a good sign.
I don't think that guy loses often. So,
yeah, no. I think Bills, Chiefs, Bengals, everybody bounces back this week. Life returns to normal.
Craig, can you negotiate to get my boy Jalen Hyatt some more targets this coming week? He only had one.
That's, it's crazy to have all these awesome new weapons and not be able to throw them the ball. You got Saquon healthy. You've got one of the top two tight ends in the league. You've got all these fast receivers that can catch the ball and do whatever. They're getting open. Just got to get him the ball.
He needs that one extra second. Give him one more second, offensive line.
Yeah. He might just need to be playing in normal weather. That's what I'm going to go.
Yeah, it was a crap.
But line. Danny Jones needs to pull the trigger too. Like I think he's still so hesitant with some of these things too. Just trust yourself, get it out there, have a little bit of Josh Allen, and who cares if you get the turnover sometimes, but these guys can all make plays, get him the ball.
Yeah.
Preach. All right. So as we wrap up here, you can keep up with us at oneclubshort.com for everything you want to know about the upcoming Morris County event. You can follow us on Instagram. We're at oneclubshort. We're very active on there, especially if you want to see some of that merch that Craig was talking about. A lot of that has been going up on the Instagram story. Looks awesome. So you can follow us there. On Twitter, we are at One Club Short, and then the number one. Podcasts are available wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening on Spotify, you'll get video, and the videos also go up on our YouTube, which is at One Club Short Pod. That wraps it up for this episode. We'll be back same time, same place next week to do it again. Until then, thanks everyone for listening.